Hello, Junior. You're on the air.
All right, man.
All right, man.
What's going on?
We're going on a field trip tonight, man. You prepared?
Absolutely.
All right.
Where are we going?
Out in the fields, out in the country. We're getting away from the city smog. Fresh air.
Yeah, I'd suggest going as far away from the lights of the city of Cincinnati as you can. Like, maybe go out to
Goshen.
Goshen. Yeah, go out to Goshen.
I've got everything I need, man. I got a roll of toilet paper. I've got it all.
Do you?
Absolutely.
Good. You got something to keep you warm, like a jacket or a pair of galoshes or something?
I don't need all that, man.
What do you mean
roll of toilet paper, man?
What do you mean a roll of toilet paper? Don't you mean an image isolator and intensifier?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Got a six of Bud?
Yeah.
All right. Sounds to me like you're set for the field trip.
I got everything. A roll of toilet paper and sets. That's all you need in life, you know what I mean?
All right, well, let's take a couple other calls before we actually leave on this field trip, okay? 749-1444. Give us a call.
So if you really don't know what's going on, you want to tell them what's going to happen here in a few
minutes? Yeah, if you've ever tuned into Channel 48, your local PBS station here in town, right before sign-off, low about 12:15, 12:30.
I think it was like 12:38 this evening.
Yeah, you've seen Jack Horkheimer, the Star Hustler. He comes walking out of the galaxy and he says, "Hello there, fellow stargazers." And he goes flying around. He tells you all about what's up there in the sky.
And he acts like his... Somehow he's paralyzed from the waist down because he just spins on his hips, sort of like a top, like a robot or something.
Hello, Mitch, you're on the air.
How you doing?
We're doing okay. How you doing?
Okay, fine. I want to thank you.
Y'all ready for the field trip?
Yes, sir, I am.
Where are you going to go?
Anywhere you want me to go. Apparently, I can call you from a payphone somewhere. You can give me a designated area.
Could you? Well, go out to Berea or someplace. Find a payphone where there's not a whole lot of lights.
Well, see, I'm out here in Forest Park. Give me an area around here, and
Forest
I'll go
Park's
to a
Forest Park's a great place to be. Go out to Winton Woods.
Okay.
And they got a payphone down there by the lake, too. Make sure you got your portable radio with you.
Okay, that'll work.
You know, Chris, all through school, I never really liked, you know, the stars and astronomy and all that stuff.
Well, why not?
Well, I think, well, it was boring. It was dry. It was not interesting. It was just dull. It was just like, look up a bunch of little dots in the sky. And you'd go to the planetarium here in Cincinnati. And that would be fun, you know, to kill a half an afternoon. It's better than sitting in class. But I think if Mr. Horkheimer would have been my teacher, I would be just a huge fan of astronomy.
Probably would be.
Totally nuts about the whole science.
Hello, Jermaine.
Yeah, what's up?
What am I getting? We're getting ready to interview the Star Hustler.
Who's the Star Hustler?
Jack Horkheimer.
Jack Horkheimer. What's he all about?
Well, he does a little 5-minute program on PBS, which is Channel 48 on your television dial around here.
Oh, right.
And he clues you in on different astrological...
Astrological is like your horoscope and stuff.
Okay, well, I'm going to make
astronomical is like planets and galaxies.
Okay, that's the first time I make the mistake, but I'm going to make it about 20 more times. Right. And he's going to clue you in on what to look for in your evening sky to make your evenings that much more entertaining and romantic.
Yeah, I understand, yes. I understand exactly what you're saying, yes.
All right, so grab your portable radio and head out your front door.
Well, you know I got my portable radio. You know what I'm saying? If I didn't have my portable radio, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I always listen to this station, so I know what's going on, you know what I'm saying?
Right on. We got a clear night out there, too. You know that, Jermaine?
I'm on my porch. I'm looking at the stars, you
all
right. Know what I'm saying?
Got a pair of binoculars?
I got it all. I got telescope, binoculars, whatever you want to see. I got it all,
You checking out Belinda who lives across the street?
I'm looking at the lady across the street. You know?
Yeah, we know you are. All right. Well, stay tuned. All right, buddy?
All right.
All right, later. Let's take one more. One more, then we'll go on.
I'll tell you.
749-1444.
You brought up a good point, though, Chris. I mean, if you're going to have a telescope and stuff, use it exclusively to gaze at stars. Don't be a peeping Tom.
Beautiful celestial objects.
Not everyone's Naked Renee and wants you peering in her window at her.
Right on.
So, you know, let people have their privacy and merely use it to gaze at the stars and the wonder of creation.
This is going to be good. Hello, Bill. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Bill.
How you doing?
We're doing great. How you doing?
Very good. Go ahead and pump that up, guys. I'm on the air.
Pump it up. What are they pumping?
Wait a minute now. Yeah,
yeah. Have we got a Star Hustler party in the making here?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sounds that way.
Hold on.
Hey, Bill, what's the beverage of the evening out there?
We're getting feedback here. Yeah. Okay, it's
tequila, man. Tequila.
Okay, tequila.
Jack Daniels and Budweiser, actually.
Where are you calling us from?
Excuse me.
Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from Mount Healthy.
You all fired up for the field trip?
Actually, we are.
All right. Well, your enthusiasm is heartening. We got to get a hold of him.
Holy moly.
Later.
We'll be right back.
Jack Horkheimer, you're on with Chris and Rob. How you doing this evening?
Very, very good, and yourself?
Oh, we're doing fine. Thanks for asking. So you're the Star Hustler on PBS, and you have a lot of fans here in southwestern Ohio. Where'd you get the name Star Hustler?
Oh, Star Hustler's been a handle I've had for many, many years. Years ago, people said that, once had a lady tell me that she'd buy a used planet from me. And I said, some of my friends say I sell the stars very hard, and I guess they call that hustling. And the name just is kind of born out of my natural kind of enthusiasm. I've been accused of being enthusiastic of all I do for a living. Not until I saw myself on television did I realize that I was kind of over-enthusiastic.
You are enthusiastic. But that's what makes you so charming. That's why I think a lot of kids in America don't like science, because it's so boring and dull. If all the science teachers were as enthusiastic as you, hey, you know, those SAT scores would be through the roof.
Well, if they renamed science something else, I think it could sell it a lot faster. Science today in many schools has become quite a popular topic. You know, and when I was a kid, it wasn't that all that popular. It was considered kind of egghead. But today,
you make it hip.
Exciting.
You make it hip for the kids to get into.
Well, I hope I don't just hit the kids. I really aim for the adults, the man on the street, the people who were kind of shied away from science when they were kids because perhaps it was kind of frightening and kind of too esoteric. And that's the person I want to reach, because the stars are one of the, how can I say it? I don't want to get heavy here, but they're part of the heritage that we have that's denied to a lot of people. When I was growing up in Wisconsin, I'm actually from southern Wisconsin, I grew up in a rural area. We could see the stars any clear night. And, you know, people for hundreds and thousands of years used the stars as a form of nighttime entertainment. And after the invention of the electric light and, of course, television, people no longer went outside at night to get their entertainment from the heavens. They got it in front of the tube. And the city lights pretty much wiped out the night sky for a lot of people.
But now you're on the tube providing the nighttime sky.
Yeah, I hope it's a good alternative. Horkheimer and his artificial heavens. As a matter of fact, my staff down here calls me, they call me our father who dwells underneath the artificial heavens.
So tell me, we told all our listeners to grab their portable radio and their roll of toilet paper and go outside and start looking up. What are they looking at right now?
Well, if you look over toward the southwest, you'll see a very beautiful gibbous moon. It's quite a handsome moon. And if you look down below...
Is a gibbous moon like a moon that looks like a monkey?
No gibbous... Well, that's kind of interesting a point. You know, I have never thought of it that way. Gibbous, actually, the word actually means hunchback. And when the moon is waxing and waning, and when you go past first quarter and the moon is beyond what we call a quarter of a circle... has kind of a hump shape on one side, so we call that gibbous. And when it's coming back out of waning, when it's after full and it's shrinking, we also have a period we call the moon gibbous. So we have a gibbous moon tonight, and below it we have an interesting object. There's kind of a bright star-like object. It isn't a star. If you're looking out there in the southwest, you see an object extremely close to the horizon, very, very, very close to the horizon. It's kind of pale yellowish, and you can use your image isolator intensifier to identify it. And of course, if you've been watching the show regularly...
what in the world is an image isolator and intensifier?
Well, I know that you've been telling everybody out there in southwestern Ohio to take a roll of toilet tissue outside with them tonight along with their portable radio, and they actually don't need the toilet tissue. You need the roll around which the toilet tissue is wrapped, because if you look at sky objects, stars, planets, etc., you actually, through the toilet roll, you'll actually isolate the image of a planet or star and thus intensify it. The light from that object will fall more intensely on the Your eye will stimulate your eye a little more. You'll be able to detect subtleties of color and, of course, brightness. So if you use, of course, you can cheat. And you can use the roll around which paper towels are wrapped, too. You'll have a much longer version.
Isn't that a good thing?
I have a very fancy version. I've got two different size. I had two different size toilet tissues, and a big one and a small roll. And so I've got one inside the other, so they're kind of telescoping toilet tissue rolls, which I call my...
And you could put a lens in the end of it, too, couldn't you?
Put a light at the end of the tube?
A little lens.
A little lens. Well... Yeah, I suppose so. I've never tried that because then we get into cheating. Then we get into high tech, and I like to keep my show as low tech as possible.
Now, you mentioned
identifying the stars.
You mentioned something on your show about comparing your taking your image isolator and intensifier and comparing the planet Mars to another star that was already red.
As a matter of fact, we can do that in just a few minutes. But if you're looking very close to the horizon, the next few minutes you'll be able to see this yellowish object, which is planet Saturn. And interestingly, it is right now in almost exactly the same position it was in relationship to the stars as it was 500 years ago this week.
You mean when Christopher Columbus first sailed the ocean blue?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, it's in Capricorn. And you'll see it more prominently all this week and next around 9 o'clock at night. If you go out and look due south, you'll see this bright object, Saturn. And it's right in the dim constellation Capricorn, and indeed, Capricorn is almost kind of boat-shaped, which is kind of unusual, and it's right where Columbus saw it 500 years ago when he landed in the New World. So it takes Saturn about 12 years to make one circuit. Excuse me, not 12 years, that's Jupiter. It takes Saturn about 29 and a half years to make one circuit around the sky. So we're seeing something rather interesting here the very week that... we celebrate the 500th anniversary. You've got Saturn in Capricorn. But if you take your image isolator intensifier and turn around and look in the opposite direction toward the southeast, you'll be able to see the constellation Orion, which is pretty easy to identify. You'll see three stars in a perfect row. The only three equidistant spaced stars in the entire heavens. That's the belt of Orion. You'll see two bright stars above, which are shoulder stars, and two below, which are knee stars. But if you look at one of the shoulder stars, you'll see it's red. If you can't see with just the naked eye, look at the shoulder stars with your image isolator intensifier, your toilet tissue roll. And one of them will look very red. That is the star Betelgeuse, or Betelgeuse, or as kids like to call it, Betelgeuse, because...
That's the movie. They did a movie about a demon named Betelgeuse, didn't they?
Betelgeuse, yeah. We call it Betelgeuse because it's red, and then we used to say, you know, if you stepped on a beetle, well, it would look kind of icky red. And that's what we call Betelgeuse. Not really, but it's a good story. If you look very close by, let's say you take the three stars in the belt of Orion, which you can see over in the southeast. Now, if you take those three stars, and you shoot an arrow up from the horizon up, that arrow will land, an imaginary arrow will land on another close-by red star called Aldebaran, which is the red eye of Taurus the Bull. And if you look back and forth with your image isolator at Aldebaran, the eye of Taurus, and Betelgeuse, the shoulder, one of the shoulder stars of Orion, you'll see that both stars have a reddish cast to them. Very, very interesting. See if you can detect right now as you look back and forth at these things for all those you're outside looking for your image isolators. Detect the differences in shades of color because the stars really do come in many different shades of color, and the best way to identify these shades is to isolate them in the sky.
And Mars changes its shade a little bit over the month,
yes,
doesn't
it? It certainly does, as a matter of fact. And if you look, we got to look down to the left of Orion. You're going to look down closer to the horizon. You'll see below Betelgeuse, you will see another reddish object, and that is the red planet Mars. And I like to call Mars kind of a, when it's at its brightest, it's kind of like a brassy ball bearing that's been polished with jeweler's rouge. It has kind of what I call a rougy brassy gold. It's a lovely, lovely color. Now, the interesting thing about Mars, it's coming towards us very rapidly, and it's coming towards what we call opposition. It'll reach its brightest point in 2 years, in the past 2 years, just shortly after the turn of this year, in early January.
That'd be a good time to send a rocket there, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think I have enough cash. however, if you take a look at Mars right now, with that image isolator, and you look at it every night for the next couple of months, you're going to see this grow brighter and brighter. As a matter of fact, it's going to, from this week through the end of this month, it's going to brighten up several times. It's going to be much, much brighter next week than it is now, and even much brighter at the end of October than it is right now. It's really quite handsome. So you've got three objects right there together, three different shades of red. Maybe we could call it tints of red. We have Mars and Gemini, very close to Betelgeuse. Then we have Betelgeuse, and then we have good old Taurus. And Mars is interesting.
Well, there's life there, right?
Yeah, it is a planet. Well, it's kind of an interesting thing. The planet is only 4,000 miles wide, which makes it two times the diameter of our moon, which is 2,000 miles wide.
Well, I also heard
about half as wide as the Earth, which is 8,000. You got a 2-4-8 situation. You got a 2,000 mile wide moon tonight. You got a 4,000 mile wide Mars, and you got an 8,000 mile wide Earth, which you're sitting on, contemplating this 2,000 mile wide moon, 4,000 mile wide Mars.
Did you hear the rumor that maybe there's pyramids there, or a big face that looks like a human face?
Oh yes, I remember back in 1976 when I came back from watching the first pictures come in from Mars into Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
You were there?
Oh, the pictures. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I did a show on it just, I think, about a year ago. And
I bet that was exciting, wasn't it?
Well, it was very exciting. People speculated that the face on Mars, the so-called face on Mars, is the face of Jesus. But it kind of shows how times have changed, because about 2 years later, all the periodicals came out and said, no, it was really the face of Elvis. And then a few years later, people said, no, it was the face of Ted Kennedy. And it finally ended up, last I heard, I think one of the national tabloids said, no, it definitely been identified as the face of Pee Wee Herman.
I'm going to start telling people it's the face of the Star Hustler. I bet you'd like that. That'd be the best promotion for your show ever, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know. If I gain any more weight, they're going to have to find a round amount instead of one of those little thin ones. But yeah, nevertheless, some people have actually proposed looking for that face. But of course, the face is nothing but if you look at the photograph carefully. And we always keep one in our space gallery. We have a Mars gallery at the Miami Planetarium. We always have a picture of it there because people are interested in that. You can see very clearly that it is a landform, and that it just happened to be the angle of sunlight and shadow that created this face, much like, if you've ever been to Wisconsin Dells, or I'm sure you've got places up there in Ohio where you go through the woods or down a river and you'll see a strange rock formation. If you look at it long enough, somebody will come up with a great idea to call it, name it something after a silhouette or something. And
well, like looking at a bunch of stars and saying it looks like a guy riding a bull.
Yeah, exactly. Just about that. The interesting thing about the stars, people have often asked me, and I'm sure asked a lot of people down through the ages, why star patterns are named star patterns when they don't look at all like their names. And I've always said, well, would you expect the state of Washington to look like a...
If you were going to come up with your own constellations, what would some of the, maybe they call them the Horkheimer constellations,
well,
what would they look like?
I used to, when you talk to children have wonderful imaginations, and I had some friends here many, many years ago when I first got started, and I remember talking to the stars one night at a house party. We were out back by the ocean looking at some stars, and I was trying to point out Orion, which is a very prominent one, and this little kid, the hostess's youngest child, said, it doesn't look like a hunter to me. It looks like a dress. So for years, I would occasionally refer to Orion as Orion the Dress, because this is what this kid saw. Some people look at Orion and see a butterfly. Use your imagination, it looks kind of like a bow tie. But the stars by any other name,
Well, there's the one that looks like an ice cream cone that's spilling out, too. And it helps you find the North Star or something?
Well, that's the Big Dipper. The Big Dipper helps you find it.
Well, what's all that about an
ice cream
cone?
Scoop, I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good... Yeah, I mean, today, that's a very good idea, because, we talked about the Big Dipper, and people in 1992 in America, at least, don't run out to the back, go to the well, and get a cup with a long handle on it called a dipper. So a lot of kids will ask, well, what's a dipper anyway? I kind of like the idea of the ice cream scoop. You know, that's a pretty good idea.
Well, don't you think we could, like...
I'll use it. I'll steal it.
Well, I also think, don't you think we should name some of the constellations after talk show hosts?
Okay, give me a clue.
Well, like, maybe, like, the Chris and Rob constellation? What do you think of that idea? Maybe you could come up with one and show it on your show next month.
Well, if you look down below Orion right now, you will see some faint stars. If you draw lines between them, we call them Lepus the Hare. However, there are really four stars that are kind of not as bright as the stars in Orion. And the Chinese used to draw lines between those four stars, and they'd have a couple stars off in the distance. They draw a couple lines between, it represents a little tiny house behind a little tiny screen. And I'm not kidding you, folks. This constellation Lepus the Hare in China for a long time was called the Wayside Inn of Celestial Convenience, or the Chinese equivalent, which means it was kind of like a road stop in ancient China, like a rest stop along the highways of America. So there's actually a rest stop in the sky right underneath the feet of Orion the Hunter.
So if Orion the Hunter got tired, he could go knock back
right,
a brew there.
All right, got it.
All right, Jack, I think it's just a question everybody wants to know. Did we really land on the moon, or were we in Arizona?
Oh, no. Well, I'm sure we landed in Arizona first, and then we landed on the moon. Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I've had many, many, many interesting conversations with a gentleman who was the second man to walk on the moon, who used to stop frequently in Miami and come to the planetarium.
What's his name? Who was it?
Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah, okay, Buzz.
And I've had many conversations with him, many pleasant chats, and yes, indeed, the moon feat, the moon landing was probably one of the most exciting times, I think, I remember in American history. I was there at Cape Kennedy the day it lifted off, and then, as strange as it may seem, I got on an airplane to fly home to Wisconsin to do some work on a book. And when I got home, I remember I was home for a few weeks, and, I remember, I think that was the summer that I fell in love with Star Trek.
Yeah. Are you a Trekkie, Star Hustler?
No, I'm not a Trekkie. I'm not a Trekkie. I like science fiction, but I'm not a science fiction addict. Have you been up there in Ohio? Have you just had the director's cut of Blade Runner come to theaters yet?
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw that this past weekend, and it was kind of painful for me to sit through it. I loved it the first time, but I did not like it. I thought the photographs of Sean Young were quite lovely. She's a very gorgeous woman, but I got a little tired of all the bloodshed, and the story kind of wore thin after a while. But I am a science fiction lover from some points. I could sit and watch 2001 on the original screen, which there are none left in America, the Cinerama screen, forever. I like the old Twilight Zones. I'm more a Twilight Zone aficionado than I've been a Star Trekkie.
Mr. Horkheimer, do you believe in UFOs or extraterrestrial life?
Well, it depends on what side of the bed I wake up from in the morning and how serious I take myself. So, you know, I believe that there are a lot of unidentified flying objects, because there are a lot of objects that we can't identify that are flying. But
some of them are birds.
Once they become identified, they become IFOs, identified flying objects. So I could talk about that for hours, because it's an interesting topic about, you know, the pros and cons. And
but what about Frank Drake and his big radio signal?
Oh, SETI. Well, that's a whole different trip. You see, you don't have to have flying saucers to.
Yeah, they can stay on the plane.
Like SETI goes online soon. And Project SETI, which is the Search
what's SETI stand for?
Is, I think, perhaps one of the most unique projects, and something I've been waiting for since I've been a kid. I really think that probably in the next 10, 15, 20 years, that with this massive, incredible search for radio signals, that we will find something. Most astronomers have believed for the past 30 years that intelligent life has to abound throughout the universe. As a matter of fact, the only reason people didn't talk about it in the 50s, some of the most famous astronomers of this century never ever discussed it, because they said simply, well, fellas, we have a government job, we work at a government observatory, and if we start talking about little green men on other planets, we're not going to be working for anybody. Because back in the 50s, anybody who even mentioned extraterrestrial intelligence was considered ready for...
Kind of a wacko, huh?
Yeah, strictly wacko. But today, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence is a very serious topic. We want to find out what's on the other side of the hill, or let's say the extraterrestrial hill. And our chances of detecting intelligent signals from outer space, from planets beyond our solar system, well, we wouldn't be doing it if we didn't think we stand a chance.
What about this Hangar 9 place out in Kansas or wherever, where we got the extraterrestrials?
Right up the road in Dayton.
We got all the extraterrestrials held in captivity, and we got their spaceships locked up and stuff.
Well, I wish, you know, they'd send me one, because, you know, if they did, you know, I could start a talk show and just be the first person in the country just to have extraterrestrials for guests. I would like that very much.
Didn't I see one on your show once dressed up?
It might have been me, without my hair.
Well,
I don't know.
One last question.
I have a question, too.
You do?
Yeah.
What's your question, Ron?
My question is, why do you wear the jacket? Can't you guys heat the studio?
Well, the studio is very, very hot. As a matter of fact, working in my artificial universe is a very hot experience.
You know, our intern, Jim, works a lot in an artificial universe.
Yeah, I tell you, television was a lot easier before they had pictures when it was called radio.
Mm-hmm. Here we are.
Then they didn't have to hose you down every 10 minutes because of the intense heat. No, the little jacket is I call my generic jacket. Years ago, when I did Star Hustle before I went into national television in the mid-80s, I actually used to look like Clark Kent. I was accused of being Clark Kent, and I was very slender, had lots of hair, and I wore a three-piece suit.
You probably had to fight the babes off with that lightsaber.
I tell you, man.
Let's wrap it up. I got one last question for you. What can we look forward to in the future, both in the celestial skies and on the Star Hustler program?
Well, I tell you what, we've got something very fascinating coming up on December 9th, and if you watch my episodes, I just taped them tonight, as a matter of fact. Maybe we can talk about it on the air around that time. We have an eclipse that is occurring.
Wow.
And it is very interesting. Back in the year 1504, Christopher Columbus was stranded off on the northern coast of Jamaica, just a little bit east of Montego Bay.
I bet he got mugged.
Well, he did something worse. He had an almanac with him. He was trying to get his ship's reprovisioned and stocked up, and he had no success. He had an almanac, and on February 29th, 1504, in the afternoon, he called the chieftains of the islands to his ship, and he said he demanded them to restock his supplies. And he said if they didn't, his god would cause the moon to rise with a special sign that night as a sign of upcoming punishment. The moon would rise, quote, inflamed with wrath and anger of God. He knew, of course, that at sunset that night that the moon would rise in total eclipse. And indeed, he went down, retired to his cabin, and as the sun set in the west, the moon rose in the east that night. The moon did indeed rise in total eclipse. The chieftains, of course, ran to the ship, and they begged Columbus to please intercede with his god to remove this curse, because they thought it was a sign of things even worse to come. Columbus went to his cabin, said he would try to persuade his god to look down upon him with favor. And just he timed the eclipse when he knew that totality was just about to end. He came up and said he persuaded his god to remove this evil curse. And as a sign that his god would look upon him with favor again, he said the moon would soon lose its wrath and its inflammation and its anger. And of course, totality slowly left. And needless to say, Columbus's larders were stocked from then on. So I have been waiting for the whole year, for an entire year, since the beginning of this year, to tell this story. I had to bite my tongue all year because I've named eclipses for many, many years. And this one is very special because I think it's appropriate. Here's what's going to happen on the night of December 9th. As the sun sets all over America, we will actually see the full moon rising eclipse, just the way it happened in 1504. But the interesting thing is the people who see it in Europe will not see it rising eclipse. They'll see the eclipse, you know, when it's up high. We'll see it just as it happened back in Columbus's time, and it happens in the last month of the 500th anniversary celebration of Christopher Columbus coming to the New World. So I say there's almost cosmic justice here because in the last month of his celebration, we're realizing, we're seeing a token, we're getting a repeat, an almost exact repeat of an eclipse that he used to con the original Native Americans. So I've entitled this Eclipse, the Shame on You Christopher Columbus Eclipse.
All right! Woo!
And if we talk, if we can talk in a couple of months, my dear friends.
We will.
I will tell all of your listeners how they can have a chance to win absolutely free a wonderful telescope plus all kinds of charts and books.
Now this telescope isn't made out of a toilet paper roll, is it?
Oh, no. This is a wonderful beginner's telescope. It has, it's just an incredible thing. We have five of them, and we're going to, all we ask people to do is to observe this eclipse from their, wherever they happen to be. Write their description on it, what color the moon changes as it rises, and send their observations to us in December. We'll have a drawing the first week of January, and five people will get absolutely free wind telescopes. So I'm hoping that everyone on the night of December the 9th watches at sunset the Shame on You Christopher Columbus eclipse.
Do you have an address, or do you want to save the address till December?
It will be, I don't know what it'll be. It'll be Channel 2 Post Office Box 2 here in Miami, Florida, but I forget the zip because I'm no good with these things.
We'll get back with you on that one.
Okay.
Jack,
do you want to plug your book or anything?
No, we do have this. I've forgotten the zip code. You know, I'm a star hustler, but I don't sell anything. We have this new Sky and Telescope has this wonderful astronomical directory, which we're just listing this week for the first time, I believe. And if you watch the show this week, you can get to, I think it's $2 postage and handling, but it's an astronomical listing of all of the observatories, planetariums, astronomy clubs all across America and other countries. And for people who really are interested in going to, you know, like meet other amateur astronomers and go to planetariums and observatories. And I think they write to Star Hustler Astronomical Directory. Let me see. It's
he's looking it up.
Post Office Box. No, I don't even have it here. It's 9111H, Belmont, Massachusetts, 02178.
02178.
And it's really fascinating because I was looking at it tonight, and there are just tons of astronomy clubs and planetariums and observatories all throughout Ohio. I didn't realize there were that many there. There's lots and lots and lots of them. There's no excuse for not finding the stars in your local planetarium.
Right on.
All right, Jack. So you a big Green Bay Packers fan?
Oh, I sure used to be.
Well, they got lucky when they beat the Bengals. We just thought we had to clue you in on that before you left. Thanks a lot for talking to us.
It's been wonderful talking to you guys.
And we'll talk to you in December.
One every single night, I especially will say to you too, and to all of your listeners in southwestern Ohio, keep looking up.